This is Edge Cases, a podcast about the grumpier side of software development, mostly, but not always, Apple-related, featuring myself and my co-host, the Aussie and Harriet of Objective-C. I'm Andrew Pontius.
And I'm Will French.
This is episode 47. It's Saturday, April 27th, 2013. And our topic this week, Wolf?
Is auto layout part due.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Why is that?
For really no reason.
Okay, just checking. Okay, so we do have some follow-up. I'm mostly going to hand that off to you, Wolf, but I just have one quick piece of follow-up. The author of the book I referred to in the last episode, iOS Layout Demystified, has actually listened to our episode, and she tweeted at least two things about it. And the first one was, how should I put this? Sadoon! So yes, I mispronounced her name, so I apologize for that. That seems to happen in podcasts a lot. So yes, from now on, she will be Erica Sadoon instead of what I was pronouncing it as.
I think she put a lot more vowels in there than you always. It would be like Khan, right? It'd be like Sadoon.
Yeah. I think it would be. Although to give it the full range, I think she would have to read it. She'd have to send us a audio of how she would do that. So
got it.
I'll leave that to her. But you have some feedback from, or follow-up for the package maker stuff.
Right. Episode 45, One Little Package of Hate. A bunch of feedback. It's actually one of our most feedback-heavy episodes. First off the gate is Peter Hosey reminded me about PKG Build, which is the successor to PackageMaker.app. I guess this is the gray hair showing, because I've actually forgotten totally about that command. I guess I've forgotten more about the package installation technology on Mac OS X than a lot of people know. But yeah, I totally forgot about that. So yes, I mentioned how PackageMaker.app didn't seem really supported anymore, and that's true. So PKG Build, I think you can also execute it as a command line tool. You can also execute it through XC Run, which is the Xcode Run tool, because you know, now that all those binary files tend to be like buried inside Xcode.app now.
Right.
You use XC Run to let it figure out where things are nowadays, and so that Ramses Sten tweeted about PKG Util. There's actually a suite of commands: PKG Build, PKG Util. But here's one of them. So it's a command line tool that includes Mac OS X that can do things like query the receipts database and tell you which package installed a particular file, and also like when it was installed. And so he basically tweeted at me saying, I forget if you said it or I said it, but one of us said the installer technology is basically that's putting files in places.
And he that would be me.
Okay. And he points out that with this ability to actually, like, you can point it at package util at a file, you can ask, you know, which package installed it and when was installed. That's actually more. With do the receipts database, that's a little bit more than what it can do. But he does follow up in a tweet saying, but of course, it only works sometimes and with certain kinds of packages, since OS X installer technology is indeed crap. So there you go. John Bafford posted, we talked about XAR, X-A-R.
X-A-R, right.
Mm-hmm. Yes. I assume it's like the Russian XAR is how you pronounce it, but... he apparently wrote
Zib, so it's probably Czar.
Yeah, I would imagine so. Should we start putting a C, Z instead of IB, Zib? Anyway. but he apparently wrote a fuse file system that actually will open up Czars.
And, that's right, yeah.
And I'll include a link to that. It's a GitHub project. And Zach Williams gave me a couple of links. He points to a project called The Luggage, which is basically a makefile front end to Package Builder and Package Maker. And so we were talking about how it's very opaque how you build these things in the first place. Apparently, you can use makefiles to compose this type of stuff, which may or may not be a good thing. Makefiles themselves have a bunch of issues, but at least it's a pretty simple format that at least is documented.
If gray hairs, like, say, certain of us, wanted to install this into their build routines, mm-hmm. they could do so.
And he also points out to another project called Munki, M-U-N-K-I, which is some, from what I could tell from the from his homepage, my project page, is some sort of meta installer builder project. Like it will actually, it will build not just only PKG, but also like Adobe, some sort of Adobe installation packages and some other drag and drop type stuff. And apparently has other different components to it that allows you to like do Apple software updates from your own server and all this. And apparently at Macworld 2011, Google's Mac operations open source Symian, which is a project that builds on Munki that provides a highly scalable server hosted on Google App Engine, whatever that means. All of this is just, I don't understand. I just figure I'd actually talk about it. So anyone who actually understands this stuff can look at it themselves.
And let us know.
I don't really care.
Okay. Fair enough.
And finally, Stefan Suter. I'm probably butchering his name. Someone sent me a French pronunciation link. Unfortunately, that link was broken. So I there's some vowel letter that if you hot link to about.com, the WAV file doesn't actually load. So I'm butchering somehow. But oh well. He gave us a few bits of information here. Oh, Stefan Suter, who is the author of Iceberg and Packages.app that I mentioned in that episode. So he chimed in and an email, and he said, yes, Package Maker is 95% officially deprecated. I don't think like Apple's out and out said don't use it, but maybe in a mailing list or just like, obviously with this command line new tool set that it's not being used anymore.
What they mean is that you shouldn't use that application. Right. Not that the installer technology that you talked about last time in your episode is actually deprecated.
Right.
It's just how you invoke it, how you use it, mm-hmm. which doesn't really solve virtually any of the problems you mentioned.
Yeah, just they're getting rid of the thing that looked good at least, and now it's just all ugly and broken. So he did also offer a correction. There is an option. I mentioned how it will override symbolic links during installation instead of following them. Apparently, there is an option to follow symbolic links instead of overriding them. And I don't know if that's new or not, but he is the guy who's built a package installer. I don't even know what to call it. Package maker program twice over, so I will yield to his knowledge on that.
It's the front end, right? It's his own front end to that technology. Yeah.
And he did mention...
So he would know, right?
Yes, he would know. And then I mentioned about the difference between the post-flight pre-flight scripts and the post-install pre-install scripts. He did mention that the equivalent of post-flight and pre-flight for flat packages is post-install and pre-install. And he says that it is stupid that they gave the same name to the former scripts in the bundle packages. If you need to differentiate initial installation from the upgrade, you do have to detect that yourself. That was what I was complaining about. And he says, which you can probably do using the package util tool, though I haven't tested whether the package is marked as installed or not before the post-install script is executed. Which, if this guy doesn't know, I'm still calling this kind of, like, this is an unsolved problem. So it's a kind of a fundamental limitation of the flat package stuff that probably could be overcome with enough technical expertise and debugging and figure out what the heck is actually going on. But I'd rather just move on with my life.
Sure.
And finally, he talked about the 8 gigabyte limit, which he says, yes, it's there. And he says, 8 gigabytes is actually not that big when you think about Final Cut Pro, which used to be provided on 2 DVDs. So that 8 gigabyte limit to how big your installer packages can be is actually a potential big limitation.
Well, I guess, I mean, that must be because Final Cut Pro just has a lot of media, sample media that you can use in their stuff, because certainly the application can't be that large.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
What, you don't link your MP3s directly into your Mako binary?
I don't.
That's where I store all my MP3s.
Yeah, right. iTunes, schmiTunes.
Well, you don't need iTunes when you have OTool.
Oh, my God.
Anyway. So now I'm done with my follow-up, and we can go right into more auto layout.
Woo!
So first thing I want to talk about, some the good things about auto layout that you didn't get to during your episode. And so kind of the lighter stuff first. So I actually, auto layout talks about things in terms of left and right instead of min X and max X. And I just think that's better all around. I don't tend to think in, you know, Cartesian coordinate systems. That's off the top of my head when I'm thinking about how things are. I think in terms of left and right and top and bottom. And so I'm glad that they went with the perhaps the less technically accurate, and I don't know how left and right maps onto like different languages, all that, but I'm glad that they went with the left and right versus the min x max x stuff. Another nice thing about auto layout is that you know, we all know about how Mac OS X has 0-0 by default being in the bottom left of the screen, or on iOS is in the top left of the screen. And right. Auto layout basically just kind of like smooths over that in a very nice way. Right. So if you have, if you're doing, your layout code can be effortlessly shared. Well, not effortlessly. There's still the UI view, NS view gap there. But mostly it can be pretty much effortlessly shared between the two, which is pretty nice. And, well,
it does your mental model better.
You know,
it improves your mental model.
I don't know if it's just a quick draw talking, but it's, you know, my 0-0 has always been top left, and I always have trouble. Even today, you know, doing layout code, I always screw up the 0-0 bottom left. And I was so glad when iOS went, even though I knew the Mac pain it would cause me.
Right.
But so
top, that's top left is the way to your heart.
There you go. And another great thing about auto layout is that they picked a really good, like, names of types, where autocomplete really does a good job in terms of actually filling in things like NS layout relation, what is NS layout attribute, all this stuff. And that, you know, you look at the NS layout constraint with item and blah, 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 and it has like 8 things there or something. It looks pretty formidable to fill out. When it autocomplete, you know, when it kind of writes a method for you and it puts all the slots in there. But I find that I pretty much can just kind of start typing what I think it should be, and autocomplete takes over pretty well. And that was just because, you know, they put in the work to think about what the names of all these things should be, and it works really well, so great. And finally, on the yay part, is that along with auto layout came this thing called NS Dictionary of Variable Bindings. And I've actually written this method myself in different names a few times over, where it's just like this hack that allows you to, given a bunch of named variables in the scope, will create a dictionary with those variables as values, with keys as the same name as those values. And that's probably doesn't make sense unless you actually know what I'm talking about. But it's generally handy. Unfortunately, it is limited auto layout. If you're going to be running on, I guess, iOS 6 or 10.7 or later, you can use this in a general purpose way. I'll talk about it a little bit of its cons later, but it is a nice general utility. And like for debugging purposes even. So now we get into the nay part, the con.
So what was that? Maybe 3 minutes total?
That was 4 items at least. So I was, so a big factor against auto layout is that it's complicated. And so Miles Egan had a couple of good tweets on this. The first one tweet says, and yet another simple structured layout is turned into an afternoon of algebraic story problems by the magic of auto layout. And his second tweet is, why not ignore the fact that 95% of UI is nested grids, instead go off to the moon on a rat's nest of ambiguous linear equations?
We should have him on as a guest.
And, you know, I totally get this, right? It's you know, it's from HTML tables to grid bag layout. You definitely can. It's amazing how much of UI can be expressed as nested grids. But
and should be, you know?
Yeah, yeah. And but that said, inevitably you want to line up this one cell in this one table that is to this other cell in this other table. And that's where the nested grids really fall down. And of course, the auto layouts constraints solver system, it is more general purpose than nested grids. But you know, you almost think that there could be like this happy middle where you use like grid layout for almost everything except the thing that it can't cover, and then you can use the constraint for that one bit. And I imagine that, the grid layout system has to be expressible in terms of constraints. So it is one of these kind of superset subset things.
Yeah, it's too bad that you know, your only two options are the really complicated thing or the really simple thing.
Yeah.
And there's no middle ground.
Mm-hmm. And especially because, like, we mentioned this in the After Dark of the previous episode, which we're not actually distributing. We're just, you know, but I mentioned how, like, layout code tends to be, like, this, the most, like, it's like, oh, it feels like graphics code, which in a way it kind of it is. That it's just like reams and reams of tedious stuff, and the only salvation in terms of readability is what you name your variables, and that's the only thing that gets you through it. And it's just amazingly, like, it's not dense, and it seems like you have to, like, write pages of stuff to get the simplest thing to look right. And that's kind of the promise of auto layout, is that it allows you to work at a higher level, and it tends to be tedious as all get out. But at least you're at a higher level. And I think conceptually it is a win, but there's this problem where because of these constraints and having to think of it in a pretty kind of sciencey manner instead of kind of a graphically way, that has problems. But so I agree on the complication thing, and I have more to say on this later, but I want to kind of move on. In terms of another nay is performance. So Florian Kugler wrote this great posting called Auto Layout Performance on iOS, and I'll link to it. And have you had a chance to read this, Andrew?
I have.
Okay. Yeah, he made the rounds, I guess, last week, which is pretty good timing for our little talks here. So the bottom line is that Florian took his iPad mini, and he was worried about performance, about auto layout, because it's this constraint-solving system, and it has, it was some sort of nonlinear big O notation in terms of what this thing might be, like exponential. Probably geometric or something, but he read the article for the details. But he measured, kind of wrote this demo app, and he went to measure it and to see how long things would actually take in complicated scenarios. And so he did two cases. He did flat views and nested views. And he found, and the first thing that should send chills up your spine is that he was measuring the performance in seconds. In modern computers, in modern software, we tend to measure things in microseconds or milliseconds, but he was measuring them in seconds. And so he found it for 200 views in a flat layout, it took a second, 1 second. Which is amazingly slow iPad mini is no slouch. It'd be one thing it was like iPad 1, but the iPad mini is fast hardware. And it was taking one full second to lay out 200 views. It's
not even Retina.
And it's it took between 14 and 18 seconds for 1,000 views. And it was even worse for if your views were nested, heavily nested, that it took 1 second just for 50 nested views and 25 seconds for 200 views. And so it almost seems amazingly bad, but his app was kind of a torture test. And if you look at it, he also was kind enough to provide a real world example that looked like a pretty complicated thing. You had like maybe six major kind of sections of screen, and they had like graphs and bar charts and stuff, bar charts and pie charts and other things in there. And so he timed that, and the numbers came in much more realistic for these. With auto layout, it took 183 milliseconds. Again, this is what the number. This is the time scale we want to hear about, right? Milliseconds. And without auto layout, where he manually coded it, is 122 milliseconds. So auto layout in that case was only 60 milliseconds slower. And one of the reasons why you should go and look at this blog posting is because he has these great charts that show kind of the dreaded curve towards, as you get more views, how much longer it's taking for everything to lay out. And And so it kind of shows you what type of algorithm that auto layout has to deal with these constraints. And along the bottom of those charts is this flat blue line where it's the manual code, right? So you basically code everything up in terms of writing that terrible, tedious manual layout code versus the auto layout stuff. And it didn't matter whether he had 50 views or 1,000 views. It all took like zero. It's really, in one way, is an unfair comparison, because auto layout is this genericized system that has to do a bunch of runtime work, and where with the manual layout code, it's basically straight up, well, I was going to say straight up C code, but it's really Objective-C code that has one thing to do and do it well, and the compiler can optimize it, and you get all that sort of benefit there. So,
yep.
So the auto layout was 60 milliseconds slower, and so is it worth it? And I would say yes. In his real world example, it was 60 milliseconds slower. But how much time did it take him to write the manual layout code versus the auto layout code? And there's two phases here. Like, there's the time it takes to ramp up and learn auto layout itself, and that's not a trivial time commitment. You're not just going to watch the dub presentations. I couldn't even say presentation because there's three of them, presentations on it, and be done. Is that you have to learn the system and start playing with it and learn how to work with it effectively. And then
as someone in the middle of that, yeah, definitely.
It's serious
work to get up to speed on those.
Yeah, right. It's not something you watch 3 hours of videos on. Right there, that should be like give you a hint. It's 3 hours of dub videos on it. And it's not something that you then spend another hour playing with. You're going to spend at least a day. I actually mentioned it. I forget how much time I spend on with. I mentioned it with when I was talking with Kyle Sluter, but I think it was like 2-3 days, something like that. I spent really trying to get up to speed on auto layout myself. So it definitely requires a commitment.
And so like two or three days of full time work on it.
Full time, yeah.
Right. So that's more. It's more of an issue when, like for me, when I can't do that. You know, I need to split it up. So that makes it take even longer.
Well, I mean, it obviously depends on your job description. I mean, if you're like, even if you have an existing app and you know, like, one maybe the things that's been hanging out for a while is that you need to get your localization strategy right, and you know that your current system is not cutting it, then it's probably worth your time to check out the 2 or 3 days to get up to speed on a layout, because that's going to help you a lot in terms of dynamically sizing your user interface to the localized string widths.
Sure, if you're on iOS 6 only.
Oh, sure, right. Yeah. But, you know, every day there's more iOS 6 and less iOS less than 6s out there.
Sure.
So there's two phases here. There's the ramp-up time that it will take you – you're going to take that performance hit in terms – or I should say productivity hit, just getting up to speed and auto layout. And that has to do with the complexity that we mentioned before. The second hit is how fast can you write the code that actually does the layout, and how does auto layout help you with that? At first, you're going to be much slower using auto layout to lay out stuff versus a slinging CG Rex around. I think Brett Simmons was talking about that. Auto layout is definitely a higher level technology that I think eventually ends up paying for itself. So I have to say that if you're willing to put in the time to learn auto layout, and it seems like a good investment now, although with iCloud, I wouldn't be able to put it past Apple to back off stuff, but I don't think they're going to back off auto layout, at least not now. I mean, if they're not backing off iCloud, they're not going to back off auto layout.
Well, and it's also that, I mean, even if you use Springs and Struts anymore, it's implemented in terms of, right, of auto layout. Mm-hmm. So they rewrote the OS to use it already, and they'd have to rewrite it again to use something else, and that seems unlikely.
Right, good point. And so I think it's, you know, it's one of these things where it's like, yes, this layout, the auto layout system took 60 milliseconds more time to render it out, but hopefully after a few weeks with auto layout, your programming productivity was that much better. And so it's one of these things, it's one of these classic trade-offs where programmer productivity can be greater with auto layout, and you can write better, less code, better, code with a higher level of semantics than thus pushing Rex around.
Well, and I would, and if I can break in for a second, there's a third phase, which is maintenance.
Sure.
And the thing that would really make this pay for itself is when you need to add more to your layout, or you need to change it around in a really complicated way, and you know you need to do that in a week, and that this makes it easier than you know handling the combination of springs and struts and custom code that you would be doing this in otherwise. Mm-hmm. If this makes maintenance better, then that's the reason to do it for me.
Yeah. Good point. That's actually a good question in terms of auto layout, in terms of maintenance. Is that in some ways, like auto layout is just, it's so flexible and so powerful that I could see it actually actively hurting maintenance, because you can tie constraints any which way you want, and they're bidirectional. And that's actually a knock against it, which I'll mention later. But if you follow a certain structure to it, I think it will help. But you know, the time will tell. We really don't know yet. Okay. So it's complicated. There's some questionable performance there. I still generally think it's worth it. A gotcha here is that Xcode's refactoring tool, that the visual format strings, the visual layout format strings, are opaque to refactoring tools. So that when you go to rename a variable or an IVAR or property or whatever, it doesn't know to look inside there. So you get these nasty runtime exceptions instead of compile time errors. So that'd be really nice if the refactoring tool could learn that language. And a weird limitation is that only the visual formatting language can create NS spacers. So NS spacer is I believe it's an undocumented class. I know they were bragging on stage, like the like auto layout required an introduction of only one new class, which was NS layout constraint. And so NS spacer is like this undocumented class, and it's this really cool kind of like margin object that you get when you use a visual formatting language, where you can put a single dash there that says give me a margin that makes sense. And it's kind of like the Aqua guidelines. When you're like an interface builder and you're snapping, you're like dropping a text field into a view, and it's like, oh, your margin should be 13 pixels or whatever it is. And so that you're basically expressing the same thing in code. Like you actually don't know, you shouldn't care whether it's 11 pixels, 15 pixels, whatever. And ideally, it's like Apple could actually modify the metrics later on to match whatever they wanted to do in the future. But if you just put a single dash there and you just specify how wide a spacer should be, the visual formatting language will insert this class called NSSpacer in there. And interesting thing about NSSpacer is that it's not a fixed height width type thing, is that it will look at what things it's connected to, and maybe even what depth it's set to. I'm not sure exactly what the heuristics are. And we use different values for different things. And so it's pretty nice in terms of you can put these single dashes all over your visual format language, and things look pretty nice just by default in terms of sizing.
Yeah,
it's really nice. Yeah, it's really powerful. And unfortunately, only visual format language can create them. You can't, from what I can tell, you cannot create them from the wordier NS layout constraint with blah, blah, blah method. Yeah.
Well, can you do it from IB though? Because IB has that one where you say use the standard size. It's a checkbox, remember?
I think that's probably you probably can. I just have totally stay away from IB with auto layout.
Yes.
So I'm pretty in the dark there. I actually, I saw that in the video, and I actually looked around because I thought maybe I was just like grepping the wrong thing, and I actually looked for standard then having to do with NS layout constraint, but it's just not there.
That's right, it isn't. Mm-hmm.
And the final under the nay here thing, although we'll have more negatives later because, with tons of negatives, is that there's this weird difference between core animation-based layout and constraint-based layout animation. So did you get a chance to actually go through all the videos, dub videos on auto layout now?
I have not been able to do that yet.
Okay. There's two things. I think it was the Peter Ammon video, but there's two ways to basically move things around on screen when you're using auto layout. And there's the core animation way, and there's the constraint constant update way. And the core animation way is faster because it's it leverages core animation to do the work. And the constrained constant based way is more accurate, apparently, but it's apparently slower. I get the impression that they actually have to do the calculations again, which apparently there's like two phases of the calculation. There's like the heavy duty constraints calculation, and that's why everything is immutable in NS layout constraint. But there's this one mutable field that's ironically named constant. And it you can update that, and then you can relay out your view, and so you can kind of push things around a little bit, right? Because that's like this one CF float field, and it has very little to do with the rest of things. It's like this one like kind of nudge factor that you can push things around with, and if you can use that to nudge things around. Generally, I've been using the core animation stuff because I want the speed, but that's kind of weird. It reminds me a lot of the difference between like layer-backed views on NSView, Mac OS X type stuff, between layer-backed views and layer hosting views. Like this kind of like very fundamental thing that's not very well explained or isn't called out very much. I mean, they did a pretty good job explaining it, but it's like really fundamental, and there's nowhere. And if you look at nslayoutconstraint.h, there's nothing there about this. And this is just like something that exists in a dubbed-up presentation. Like, yeah, these two separate systems for animating things.
Well, so they don't use core animation for when you're moving things around based on update constraints?
From what I can tell, no.
That's crazy. Now, are you talking OS X or iOS or both?
From what I know, it's both. But, you know, I'm no expert on the implementation of this stuff, so I could be very, very much wrong.
Well, and what Erica Sadoun said in her book was that she seemed to be implying, at least, that you can do a lot of sort of animating views from one place to another by even removing constraints and adding new constraints and then, you know, doing update constraints, and then everything will animate to the right place.
Sure, sure.
And I would have thought that that would use the same mechanism under the hood as if you had... You know, if you had done your own like animate views or whatever.
Well, if you're doing that where you're removing constraints and re-adding them, and then doing the UI view animation or whatever, that will use core animation. That's a core animation path. The non-core animation path is when you go in and you mess with the constant field yourself.
Yeah, that I would have thought that they would all do the same thing.
Yeah, you think?
A little alarming.
Yeah. Okay, so I have a bunch of notes here. The first one is that auto layout is more mature on Mac OS X. It's been around longer.
Right.
And there's two biggies. The number one is the purple debug window that doesn't exist at all on iOS. So if you have this option where if you're violate a constraint or whatever, this weird attached purple window will surround your window, and you can exercise ambiguities, and it's pretty nice. It's very thoughtful, and they even will do things like draw the constraints that it knows in kind of an IB-like way in your window. And it's very well done, and it's really kind of sad we don't have anything like that on iOS. So, but the nice thing is, I mentioned one of the niceties of auto layout is that your layout code, it can be pretty much identical thanks to the common coordinate system. It's not really a common coordinate system; it covers up the distance differences. So you can basically like write a chunk of code on targeting Mac OS X, where the tools are nicer. And then pretty effortlessly put into your iOS app. And then a weird thing about iOS implementation versus OS X implementation is that you don't have identifiers in iOS, which identifiers are a great way to kind of name your layout items.
Yeah.
And they don't exist on iOS, which is kind of weird. But maybe they will add it in iOS 7. Who knows?
Yeah, and Erica Sadoun also mentioned that, and she's got some code that she wrote that like gives you the equivalent of that using associated objects.
Yeah, right.
Whatever it is. So,
but those associated objects, they don't end up showing up in the debug logs, right?
Right.
Yeah, yeah, that's the major limitation, because that's when you need them.
Yeah, it's like you need your own logging code to make them show up.
Right, and this is why like if you do kind of like do your layout code on OS 10, it will use those identifiers, and your debug logs would be all the richer, or at least more understandable.
Mm-hmm.
One thing I want to mention is a reactive Cocoa layout. So I guess we haven't talked about reactive Cocoa yet, have we?
No. Yeah, we haven't.
Okay, that's something we need to get to. But so we'll just. But I'll jump right to Reactive Cocoa layout, which is extension to Reactive Cocoa, and we'll just assume that our listeners can Google Reactive Cocoa. But Reactive Cocoa layout is an extension to Reactive Cocoa, which is basically a different layout system. Basically, the guys behind Reactive Cocoa were getting very pissed off at a lot of the problems of auto layout. And so they took it upon themselves to write this alternative system. And they have a few good pros here, which is there's an explicit and linear layout where layout proceeds in a linear fashion, make it easy to understand and debug the steps along the way. One of the things about the constraint system that's used by auto layout is that it's you know, supposedly solves all the equations in parallel. Of course, it doesn't, but it does also solve them linearly. But theoretically, you know, in terms of like conceptual manner, I should say that that's how you should think of how it works. And of course, there's also a black box that you don't get to see it actually working. You're just giving constraints, and it's not too much of an issue because it seems to be pretty chatty about what it has problems with. So it's not, you know, but having the code to this stuff and be able to work through it in terms of a linear way is pretty nice. It does top-down layout, unlike the constraint system, which I'll talk about a little bit about later. Conditional layouts at runtime. So Reactive Cocoa layout has the ability to dynamically enable and disable entire layout chains without actually modifying them. This is probably one of the weird things about the auto layout constraint system is that you have these kind of it's almost as if I would like to be able to have like a is enabled Boolean flag on layout constraints, so I can keep them in place and just kind of toggle them on or off. From an API perspective, it is a lot cleaner just to either add them or remove them, so it's not the end of the world. But it feels like I'll have like my app will have like five different major setups, and I'll have different things. I'll have like the same object moving between them. And I want the ability to just like turn the different ones on or off. And really, with layout constraints, is I have to apply them and remove them to my view system. And I don't know. This feels would be cleaner to me if all of them could be active at once, and if I just could shift, you know, enable them and disable them. I don't know. Maybe I could do that with priorities. Now that I think about it,
adding and removing really does feel heavyweight for that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm. There's a few other things here. I won't go through them all because I don't want to burn up too much time here. Because, boy, we're already at 37 minutes, okay? So I will move on. I've written four. I don't know if we've referred to this on the air, but I know that a running joke is that it's not a real edge cases episode unless Wolf ships a GitHub repository. So...
Yep,
and you took me to task because I think I did two episodes where I did not ship a GitHub repository, and so I'll make it up with four repositories. The first one is these are all on GitHub. I'll link to all of them. The first one is so dumb and simple, but it's I use it extensively, and this definitely should be in CocoaPods or something like that. It makes it easier to pick up because it basically doesn't pull its own weight in terms of just how little code is in it. But it's UI view. Plus JR view and super view. So in the brave new auto layout world, init with frame is kind of outdated. That there's really three things you want to do in the auto layout world when you're creating a view in code is that you want to init with frame CG rect 0 because you don't know what the rect will be. You want to turn off the translates auto resizing mask into constraints.
Yes, you do.
Yes, I've been bitten by that a bunch of times. And then, of course, you want to set the super view. And so this is just a simple, dumb category on UI view that does that all in one fell swoop. And like I said, it's totally stupid, but I use it everywhere. UI view plus JR add constraints. So the views dictionary mentioned, which is the, let's see, what is it called? The NS dictionary with variable bindings. That's pretty slick, pretty nice. problem is that, you know, usually with auto layout, when you're using the visual formatting language to specify your constraints, you specify both the horizontal and the vertical. I guess you control the horizontal and the vertical. The problem is that you want to use the same dictionary bindings, variable bindings for both those. And so I guess you typically assign that to a local variable so you can reuse them in both calls. So this is just another dumb little category that allows you to reuse that dictionary across multiple visual formatting language lines. And I used to use it extensively until the project after the next one I'm about to talk about. I wrote JR Centering Scroll View, which I think it was 3 days. Maybe it might even be 4 days, but it seemed to remember 2 or 3 days. Where I was trying to figure out this pretty simple thing and how to do it in terms of auto layout. And the idea is that you have this scroll view where you put something inside this content view, and you want it to be centered horizontally and vertically, and yet have it be able to scroll if the content gets too large. And that turns out to be, like, I attacked this in so many different ways on, like, how to do this in auto layout. And it doesn't help that the scroll view with auto layout it took me a while to figure out exactly how to make it work with auto layout. It turns out that you have to set a constraint to make the scroll views, like, right-hand side the same as the content view's right-hand side so they can actually figure out how big the content view is. It was kind of weird to figure out, and I spent some quality time Stack Overflow, and I took a bunch of attempts at it, like, I don't know, five attempts, different strategies, and I finally found one that kind of works. And so it works, and in terms of it functions seemingly flawlessly. I couldn't break it anymore. So it's up on GitHub, JR Centering Scroll View. But however, I am unsatisfied because it's an ambiguous layout. So if you do the nice little debugging thing where, like, you set a breakpoint, not even breakpoint, you hit the pause button and you do a PO, I guess it's a, what is it? UI window, key window, something key window, content view, underscore auto layout trace, that this is a flies off my fingers. It's when I actually have to do it verbally that I don't know what I'm talking about, but it will show up in that little debug tree as having ambiguous layout. If anyone wants to fork it and try and figure out how to not make it ambiguous, that'd be awesome, but I can't figure out. So that you could consider that a knock against auto layout, or is this a knock against me? I don't know.
Or both.
There you go. And so the fourth project is something that's pretty interesting, and that I wrote, I guess, last week or something, that I'm calling auto layout shorthand. And so it's an alternative system for creating and adding auto layout constraints. And it kind of feels like CSS, and that it kind of gives you the structure of where you think things in terms of, like, top left, bottom right. But it's unlike CSS, it's more powerful, because CSS tends to be like, you say, oh, the top of this thing should be 50 pics, I guess. And I guess we assume points and all this auto layout stuff. But with auto layout, of course, you have the relation is variable. You can set to equal to or less than or greater than, and that's really powerful stuff. And of course, HTML's, like, the default layout model is like, everyone has, like, no end of trouble with getting things to work right with the overflows, and, like, I know a common technique is to just float everything, and that has its own problems. But fortunately, with, like, the nice thing about the constraint system is that it actually kind of works like how I think. Once you put this auto layout shorthand on top of it, that I can think of, oh, the top of this should be equal to the top of that, and the left of this should be equal to the right of that plus a slop or plus this margin. So once you kind of, like, express it in this way, which is auto layout shorthand, instead of having the visual format language or the longhand constraint with item, blah, 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 is that you basically pass in a dictionary. And the dictionary kind of reads like CSS. And it shoehorns a domain-specific language into Objective-C literal dictionaries. And if that sounds kind of weird, you need to take a look at the code that we'll link to. Then you look at that and, like, be visually immediately obvious of what I'm doing there. So So I'll mention a couple of the pros of it. It's actually tends to be more concise than even the visual formatting language. Yet it's more powerful. One of the limitations of the visual format language that bit me a lot is that there's no way to center things using it. You have to break out the much more wordy constraint with item method. It's actually more powerful, the auto layout shorthand, than the constraint with item method, which is the big wordy one that takes six arguments or whatever. But it's actually a smidge more powerful because, weirdly enough, that method, even though it takes a boatload of arguments, you don't actually specify the constraint's priority when you create it. You have to then go, after you create it, you have to go in and then set the priority. I think it probably defaults to required or whatever. So the auto layout shorthand, you actually can specify the priority at creation time. So it's a smidge more powerful. And one of the big things about it is that the way it's structured is that it's refactoring friendly, that you're not embedding the names of things into strings that's opaque to refactoring support in Xcode, so that refactoring just always works. And the weird thing about the NS dictionary of variable bindings thing, it's not the best of buds with visual format language. So let's say you have an icon view, and you need to reuse it and move it around or whatever. So you're going to put it inside a property. So how you're going to refer to that is self.iconView. Well, if you actually put that into NS Dictionary of Variable Bindings, that doesn't work. It doesn't work. You can't you get a runtime exception saying, I can't find self.iconView or whatever, even though it will be in your visual formatting language string. The simple workaround is to give up on self.iconView and kind of cheat and thus use underscore iconView and to refer to the IVAR directly. The better way to do it is to actually write your own view dictionary, which thanks to Objective-C dictionary literals nowadays isn't actually that hard. The feeling that NS Dictionary of Variable Bindings was created before we had Objective-C dictionary literals.
Possibly, yeah.
Yeah, because it's such a great thing until you have dictionary literals. And once you have dictionary literals, it's like, oh, is it really worth it? And it does have a bunch of cons. It's like this is, of course, another dependency, but it's only 1.m file. So it's not that bad. It is another thing to learn. You're going to probably have to learn the visual formatting language anyway to understand when your things blow up, auto layout is going to debug. Tells you what's wrong, it uses visual formatting language, which I actually think is pretty cool, that it will take these these NS layout constraint things and turn them back into visual formatting language syntax. So it's actually, I don't know how they do that, whether it's some sort of bidirectional
magic.
There we go. Bidirectional technology or something, but it's pretty nice. And unlike everything else, because it ends up boiling down to using NS layout constraint with item. That means that it can't do NS spacers by itself, which is our cool little friend who can magically correct the visually correct thing for depending on what you're hooking up to what. And since that only visual formatting language can create NS spacers, that means that you don't get them with auto layout shorthand. But fortunately, auto layout shorthand totally interops with visual formatting language and all that. So if you want to somehow get those two working together, that should not be a problem. But that would actually defeat a lot of the purpose of auto layout shorthand. So bottom line is that auto layout shorthand, I found it shrinks my code in terms of auto layout significantly. I find it's much more readable with it. And it seems as getting towards the point where it's going to be more powerful. One of the things that I'm going to add is when you're setting a top left center constraint on a UI view, that those will be use the associated objects type thing. So you'll be able to find those constraints with those keys later, and then update them or what have you. Also, it will add some structure to auto layout programming that this is the default NS layout constraint, and of course the constraint array on UI view doesn't really give you. You can pretty much hook things up any way you want, which is powerful, but I think a little bit more constraint on the system will help simplify the code and make it more structurally apparent what's going on.
Yep.
Okay, and wow, 49 minutes. This hadn't gone on nearly as long as I thought, so that's pretty good.
Well, you were talking pretty fast.
I'm sure the last few minutes was a blur.
Okay, so is that it?
That's it.
That's it. Well, that's cool. And yeah, so and all the GitHub stuff will be in the show notes for everyone. And let's see, was there anything else on my end? Oh, I will mention something real quick. There was a blog post by Joe Conway, iOS Auto Layout Fun Facts and Tips, that came out a little while ago. I'll put a link to that in the show notes as well. And there's one section where I talked about the keyboard shortcut you need to know about for Interface Builder, where they say if you hold down the command key, he says Xcode lets you break any constraint applied to a view while resizing it, which originally struck me as, hey, wow, that's pretty cool. But it turns out it doesn't really do that much. It had some weird effects, but it still didn't let you actually break things for any length of time because IB still enforces some kind of constraints to you all the time. I think it changes which constraints it enforces.
Oh, okay.
So it changes things in a different way than it would have if you had just resized things otherwise. But otherwise, it doesn't really get you very much, unfortunately. So there's still no magic bullet there. So yeah, that's it for me.
Okay.
So please visit our website, edgecasesshow.com, all one word, for show notes, a link to our podcast on iTunes, and more. And you can find us individually on Twitter, me, A. Pontius, APONTIOUS, also on app.net, and Wolf, his last name, Wrench, that's the word rent, RANT, plus Z, plus SCH. We'll see you next time.